holding it like an inch or two in front of my mouth.
It looks bad for you.
You did it backwards.
All right. Nonsense. It makes me feel great. Like I could.
That's pretty good.
Can I keep his head for a souvenir?
Take all the world.
All right.
I like it. Hello, neighbors, and welcome to another classic episode of Men of Low Moral Fiber, the show that never fights back against giant demonic babies, be them acid milk sprain or not. I am your host, Ben Helms, and with me, as always, is my werewolf freezing, cheerleader and baby retrieving, and ultimately Dr. Tongue defeating co-host and big brother, Jason Helms. How's it going, man?
Pretty good, Lin-Manuel Miranda. How are you doing? You've been listening to some Hamilton recently?
Wow. Yeah, I mean, the Grammys kind of got me on a groove of Hamilton and Kendrick Lamar. Just diving in. It's just kind of on repeat on my Spotify right now.
Yeah, it's been a pretty great week for me. If you can tell, we're a month or two behind when these things actually drop. So we're excited about the Grammys. We, of course, don't know about all these future events with Hamilton and Kendrick Lamar. And I guess aliens, probably.
I can't believe
whatever
Kendrick
happens next month.
Just took over Hamilton in the third act and killed Aaron Burr in defense revenge.
That was surprising. Yeah. I'll admit.
Yeah.
That was surprising.
2016, it's a crazy, crazy year so far, you know?
Yeah.
All right. So on today's episode, we're going to take a little detour. We're doing things a little differently. We're actually not going to be talking about one of those classic LucasArts point-and-click scum adventure games.
No more scum. You won't get your scum here. Sorry, you'll have to wait till next episode for your scum fix. Here's the deal. Those point-and-click adventure games were our favorites. We really love them. However, there's not a ton of them. There's only about a dozen.
Yeah, we got to save them.
And if we just did those, then the podcast runs out after about a year. And so we want to keep the magic going. And so we're going to take little breaks in between with some of our other favorite games. We're also going to dip into the Star Wars universe in the future. But don't worry, we'll get back to those scum games. I know that's what everyone's really excited about anyway.
That's what we're excited about. And if we do these kind of one-off episodes, they're not really one-off. They're still LucasArts games. They're still games we played a bunch as kids. Still really fun games. And
So we took a second to talk about on the last episode. Okay, what game are we going to do? And you probably heard us go through our list of three. And unfortunately, both of us included one game in our list of three. And I'll let Ben introduce it for you.
Yeah, we both picked three. And they were completely different lists, the three or the six, except for this one. Totally different, except for this one, which was the same, which was the Run and Gun Zombified Classic Zombies Ate My Neighbors, which leapt out of the grave and into our hearts back in 1993, which it seems like every great LucasArts game came out that year. Sam & Max, Day of the Tentacle, Zombies Ate My Neighbors, another one that if I'd done research, I would have a list of them right now that I can't think of. But yeah, this is a game that we have some personal history with as well, right?
Yeah, I was 12. I was listening to some serious Ace of Base, if I remember correctly.
Yeah, I saw the sign.
And I did. I was pretending that I was listening to Tupac and Nirvana when I could talk about it, 10 years later and really mourn and things like that. But no. Let's not lie. I was listening to Ace of Base. Yeah. I was 12.
Deep
I was making terrible decisions. Yeah.
Is that Berlin? Metro? Anyway, keep going. I don't know.
Berlin.
I don't know.
Oh, good callback. Yeah. Yeah. Now I'm stuck on that. No, because it's not Berlin. I think it's the Eurythmics. Anyway, moving on.
Okay, yeah.
There's a quick diversion.
Yeah, we're back.
And we're back. So I was 12, listening to some Ace of Base, and I went to school with some guys, and one of our friends had a mother who worked at LucasArts. And so the cool thing to do was to go test games at LucasArts, and you'd occasionally get selected. And so the person who worked there was Mary Burr. She was the vice president of marketing, I believe, at the time. She worked at LucasArts for, I think, about a decade and a half.
Director of marketing.
Maybe longer.
In Day of the Tentacle, I think that's what her credit is.
Thanks for catching that. Yeah. You're probably right.
Yeah. We'll look it up later and fix it if we have to.
Our hope, Mrs. Burr, if you're listening to this, because I'm still 12 in my mind,
right, Mrs. Burr.
Is to have her on and interview her and learn a little bit more about what it was like from the inside and from an adult's mind rather than the 12-year-old mind.
That would be awesome.
Anyway, I got to go play, and I got to go test Zombies Ate My Neighbors, which at the time, Ben, was called what?
Zombies.
Oh, swing and a miss.
Zombie Zoo, Zombie Zoo.
I believe it was just called Monsters.
Monsters. I knew that. That was in there in my research that I did.
And I think they did the right thing in giving it a better name of Zombies Ain't My Neighbors. It's evocative. It's interesting. It had to be edited for the Genesis Master System when it got ported to that. Nice. And they cut it down to just Zombies, which was your call anyway. So, you know,
that's,
you were in there.
That's what I told them.
Anyway, so me and a couple other friends, including Michael Conrad, who we'll hear from in a little bit, got to test this game, and it was really fun. But we'll talk more about testing in a second.
Yeah, so the rundown for today is we're going to talk a little bit about the history of Zombies Ate My Neighbors, or of Monsters, and how it became Zombies Ate My Neighbors. And then just kind of the how and why it got made and that kind of stuff. Then we'll be joined by Michael Conrad, a great friend of ours for many, many years, talk about the gameplay. Then we'll play a little What's the Beer, What's the Song, and then we might have a couple surprises at the end, and we'll talk about what we're going to be playing next. So let's start off with some of the history.
Yeah, so we read some interviews. We tried, again, to read in Rob Smith's wonderful, wonderful tome, Rogue Leaders, the book about LucasArts. However, unfortunately, in that book, there is a single paragraph devoted to Zombies Ain't My Neighbors. It's on two pages with lots and lots of cool pictures, but it's just not a lot of coverage of it.
You found two paragraphs on it?
It might have been two.
I found one or two paragraphs. And it was like a little aside under a picture.
Yeah.
it wasn't even part of the main text.
Two pages, one paragraph.
Oh, interesting. Yeah. Okay. All right. Fair enough.
Yeah. Yeah. But still just the one paragraph and then lots of pictures. It's not covered real well because I don't know that it was super important to LucasArts history.
Yeah.
It was important to those who played it. It became a cult hit, but it wasn't, you know, a super earth-shattering game, a pioneering game. In fact, in a lot of ways, it was a game that imitated some games that had gone before it, Robotron and Smash TV being the big ones.
Yeah.
The three-quarter overhead view, the shoot-em-up run-and-gun styles. And it's got a nice sense of humor to it as well that really brings in the LucasArts ethos, which with Maniac Mansion and Day of the Tentacle especially is that old B-movie horror or sci-fi. And this leans hard to the horror side of it. So you've got Friday the 13th influences. You've got Chucky. What else, Ben?
I don't know what movie has giant babies spraying acid milk at you, but that movie.
Giant acid milk spraying baby.
Right, from space.
And
that's a great MST3K on that one, by the way.
Oh, you said that.
Werewolves, vampires, Jason, the axe, or the chainsaw. Yeah, I don't know. Yeah, there's a lot. Giant spiders. It's just kind of anything from any of your dreams that you had as kids, any nightmares you had as kids. It's probably somewhere in this, and you have to fight and defeat that in this game.
Yeah, so we found a great interview with Mike Ebert, who was basically the guy who made the game. Working at LucasArts at the time.
Yeah.
Lead designer, thank you. That's better than the guy who made the game.
No, it's not wrong, though. Yeah.
It's not wrong. He is the guy who made the game. Other people are involved.
Yeah.
And Mike Ebert, of course, second cousins to Gene Siskel. That's not true.
Okay, cool.
But Mike was starting out at LucasArts. His first project was a port of Maniac Mansion to the Nintendo Entertainment System. He got involved in some of the Scum games, got involved in Loom. And the first game that he really took lead on was The Empire Strikes Back for the NES. But that set him up to build Zombies Ate My Neighbors, which was a game that he'd been just kind of playing with for a while, creating the engine. The engine for this, and I clearly don't understand how video game engines work, but ended up being the engine for multiple other games, some of which looked very much like Zombies Ate My Neighbors, and one of which was called Metal Warriors?
Oh, yeah.
Is that right,
Ben? Metal Warrior. Metal Warrior.
Metal Warriors looks amazing. It looks really cool. I want to go play it. However, it looks nothing like Zombies Ate My Neighbors to me, and so I clearly have no idea what an engine is.
Metal Warriors. You're right, yeah.
Metal Warriors, yeah. Anyway, so there's this great interview with him on Gamasutra. We'll put that link in the on the podcast notes. But I wanted to read one cool quote I found from it because it really gives the idea of what it was like to be at LucasArts at this time.
Yeah, definitely.
So this is the middle of the interview, and he's talking about what was it like to work at LucasArts, and Mike responds. And I just kind of want to read his quote because I like the way he says things. I'm not going to lie. It was pretty sweet. Working at Skywalker Ranch was like being at a movie studio that was disguised as an amazing vacation resort. We were the black sheep of Skywalker Ranch. We didn't fit in. My favorite memory was seeing all the game testers swarm the dining hall. They always ran to get in line first, especially on steak day.
So, steak day. All the testers just like day. Swarming the cafeteria to get steak.
Oh, I don't imagine the testers themselves were paid well. We weren't.
No, we were not paid at all.
But we loved our pay. We were paid a lot more than we expected or needed to be paid.
I got a sweet Star Wars t-shirt, actually, that I still sadly have.
That's nothing sad about
okay,
that.
Okay, cool. Yeah, we're doing a podcast about these games. It's okay that I have a couple keepsakes.
This is a safe space, Ben.
What did you get paid in again? What was your cool prize for
testing? I got paid in a Star Wars source book.
Oh, it makes it sound like sorcery, by the way.
Oh, it was a sorcery book so that I could raise Luke Skywalker's hand from the dead. Cool. Spoiler alert.
Right. Episode 8. Sorry, Rian Johnson.
Boom. So I love that quote. And we should say that when we tested it, it was actually not at Skywalker Ranch, but at some office space that LucasArts had moved into that was in San Rafael. However, Ben and I did get to go to Skywalker Ranch once. We had another neighbor.
Yeah. Anna? Angela?
No, but she lived next door Anna. Yeah.
Pretend like I didn't try to say her name. She was a great lady. Super nice. She gave us Twister and E.T., on VHS because they'd just been remastered by Lucasfilm. And that's all I remember.
And I super don't want to say specifically what she did at this point because then she'll know or someone could tell her. Yeah. And then we totally forgot her name.
Yep.
That's embarrassing. Bring it back. We're just going to move on.
She gave us a tour.
So one of our neighbors worked at LucasArts.
Yeah.
And she was just amazing and awesome and gave us a tour of LucasArts, of Skywalker Ranch, rather. And it was the coolest thing ever.
Oh my
Everything
gosh.
that Mike Ebert says in that quote is true.
Yeah.
They had a limit to how many cars could come on the ranch, for example. And if, you know, you're the 101st car or whatever the limit was, you didn't get to go on the ranch. You had to go to this parking lot and then you biked around in an ET bike all day. And that's just awesome. All of the bikes had little ET baskets on them.
Yep.
It was so cool.
Yep. Yeah. They gave every employee their own bike before that was a cool thing to do. Man, that was a cool place. Probably still is.
I would imagine.
Yeah. All right. Back, bringing us down from our dreams back to reality, the game.
Mm. So this interview is great. I love pulling stuff out of it. Couple things we learned. First off, again, like with the other games, Mike Ebert was given incredible amounts of freedom on this. It seems like the way that LucasArts really ran, and maybe the secret to its success, is a leader who can cast a vision and say, this is what we're about. This is what our games are about. It's about humor, but it's about feeling as well. It's about solving puzzles, figuring stuff out. And now you go be you. You figure that out.
Yeah, maybe that's one of the big reasons why this was so different than everything else Lucasfilm was doing and different than what kind of mainstream video games we're doing. I think we may have, I think in the interview with Michael, we talk about the fact that this was really similar to a couple other games. One of them, Smash TV. What was the other one?
Robotron.
That's right. But those weren't exactly a huge genre and still aren't a big genre of game, that top down, kind of run and gun style. So Mike Ebert just kind of took that, built his team of designers and programmers and just kind of ran with it and made this really kind of critically successful, acclaimed game in Zombies Ate My Neighbors. It was just a really, really overall, really fun game to play.
Yeah, it really was. And it's been really cool just over the last three episodes to start to learn more about LucasArts and what made them different. One other interesting thing I learned from the interview, this is something I had kind of suspected, is that LucasArts really saw itself as a competitor with Sierra.
Yeah.
Sierra, of course, made King's Quest, Space Quest, Leisure Suit Larry, Police Quest, all those games.
Galaxy Quest.
I'm sure they made that movie, I assume.
That's not correct.
So Sierra was, you know, super cool. People liked it. I never got real into their games. There seemed a seriousness about them that I couldn't get past.
Yeah.
I remember with Police Quest, you had to read the whole police manual, and half the game seemed like getting kicked out because you didn't have your shirt tucked in the right way. It was like all the real joy of being a cop and making you realize, wow, it's really mundane and boring, like most jobs.
A lot of paperwork.
Oh, this is not fun. And that was kind of my feeling about Sierra. So, but it's cool to see that LucasArts really saw themselves that way too. That I remember in middle school is kind of, you know, you pick which way you go, and you either roll with King's Quest or you roll with Day of the Tentacle, but it's going to be one or the other.
Well, it's still like that too. I remember back then it was PlayStation, or no, it was a Sega Genesis or Nintendo. There's PlayStation or N64, and then it was Wii, and it was all these. I mean, it still is Xbox or PlayStation. And most people are one or the other. And there's a whole world just to that one thing. So we definitely pick our sides with our video games still.
You know, I don't want to say that the Sierra LucasArts rivalry was as big as East Coast, West Coast rap. But I don't want to say that it wasn't either.
I think it might not have been as big, but I think it's fair to say that it came before and probably spurred it on.
I think so.
Easily.
I think that's pretty clear.
Yeah.
All this to say, Police Quest podcast. We're coming for you. Yeah. We're coming for you.
We're going to take you down. Are we going to become that? Or are you aiming at them?
I have no idea. There are competitors,
this
clearly,
podcast
if they exist.
Is just off the wall rails.
Off the rails.
Off the walls rails. So we're going to bring it back. Anything more in history? You got some more from that interview cooking up? All right. So
I got nothing.
Any more history overall? Can we kind of get into the overall game layout, gameplay kind of stuff?
Yeah, as I said earlier, there just wasn't as much to read about this game's history.
Yeah, yeah, it does seem like it was like, hey, Mike Ebert, go take this game and make it awesome, and he did.
So, enough about Mike Ebert. Let's go from one Mike to another as we move to our interview with an old friend of ours.
This is an interview with our special guest. We're gonna ask him about the gameplay and handle the rest.
All right, you all know me. I'm Jason. Here we are interviewing a good friend of mine, Michael Albert Conrad II, good old Mac 2.
Oh, yeah.
So, Mike, say hi.
What up, brothers and sisters?
And Mike grew up with Ben and I in good old Novato. We hung out a bunch as kids, and one of our formative experiences was testing Zombies Ate My Neighbors, the game we're talking about today. And Mike, what were you just saying about Zombies Ate My Neighbors and that wonderful testing experience?
I was saying it is a long time ago, and that testing experience is all but been removed from my brain, any sort of nuance of that. I will say, playing it again brought back a lot, but by a lot, I mean relatively small amount of information. So.
Yeah. I think the one thing that I remember from the game, the one that I had like a visceral reaction to of memory was the scream of the people dying and turning into ghosts. That just like shrieking scream that I won't imitate right now. But that as soon as I heard that, that's the one. Jason has it. That sounded pretty close.
I'm really proud of that, actually, guys.
That to me was, I was like, oh yeah, I have played this game many, many times. But yeah, again, it was 20 years ago, 22 years ago it came out. So
my gosh.
We talk about the testing in all of the podcasts, all three of them so far. We've talked about the fact that Jason and I were game testers for LucasArts, but I think we have about as many memories as you do of that experience.
Well, it's hilarious that we got a chance to do that. And then later, Jason remembered Jeff Nahoshian, his mother was in charge of the whole division. That was when we were in high school. So there was all the games later on. I mean, it was just like a hilarious jacking into this whole world of game testing. And we were just kids. We didn't know. It was like the same time we got invited, I think all of us, to go see Toy Story before it had come out. And we saw it where it was like half in renderings. So we were jacked into something there in Marin County. We were cool before we knew it was cool, I think.
I brag about that Toy Story thing like at least once a year. I tell people
easily
all about that.
Back to Zombies Ate My Neighbors. So how much did you get to play this time around, Mike?
I got my trusty USB N64 controller and my emulator.
Nice.
I probably fought mapping the controls to the N64 controller almost as long as I actually played the game. That was pretty difficult. But once I got it, oh man, it came back to me quick, man. It was good. I got through level 10 Nice. And was feeling really good about, thank you, feeling really good about myself. And I said, you know what, I'm going to Google how many levels there are because I don't really know.
Are there 14 or are there 15?
Yeah, that's really where I was at. And so when the number came back at 55, I was like, oh, I'm nowhere near.
Yeah.
Does 55 include any of the bonus levels or credits level?
It does.
Okay. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, it's a lot. It's a lot of levels. I think I made it to level 5 when I was like, F this game. I'm done. I don't have a lot of patience.
That is something that I remember about that game day testing was that we didn't progress very far in the game. And so then they kept jumping us further into levels let us test other levels deeper in the game. But it was really, really hard at the time. We didn't have all that wonderful Halo experience many years later on because it's that manual manipulation, of course. And so those were hard times. I remember specifically these little axe-throwing wackadoodles that would turn into fire. Oh, man. I hated them 23 years ago, and I hated them last night when I was playing it.
And sometimes when you'd kill them, they'd die, and sometimes they'd just be these little flaming dolls that would come after you. Those are nightmare fuel. It was awful.
I started counting how many shots. You know, you want to know if you're on your water pistol, how many shots it takes to kill whatever zombie or monster you're getting. It would vary, which was the most frustrating thing, because I'm in my math brain. I'm like, oh, 6 shots for this, 6 shots for that, 4 shots for this monster. The next time I saw that same monster, no, it was 12 shots. So you couldn't time anything, which... Oh, man.
One of the coolest things about the game, I mean, we'll get into it in a second, all the just the customizability, there are all the variety of different things you can have, the different weapons and everything. But one thing that I thought was cool was when you kind of get in the zone with it, it feels like an arcade game. I've got the map up, and I'm just going towards a blinking dot and running through things that are just killing me. And I'm like, you can't kill me before I get here. Ah!
Totally.
Yeah. I think that was, in retrospect, I can say my little brain then didn't understand it quite honestly, but the left-right scroll ability that we were so used to in arcade fashion, and this one had a vertical component and a left-right component, that was more akin to the Zelda kind of esque element of it. I didn't play Zelda when I was a kid. I didn't play it until later on, but that reminded me of that, and that was very different than that arcade experience I'd had previously.
And let me throw it back to one arcade game that, Mike, I'm pretty sure you and I played a bunch, Smash TV.
Wait, Smash TV? Where was this?
That's what it was called, right?
Yeah, I just looked it up as we were talking about it. Yeah, Smash TV was that same top-down look. It was a TV show, was kind of the conceit, and you would go through, and it was these Zelda-like...
More weapons!
Right, it was these Zelda-like things where it'd be one screen, and if you go through the door on the right, the whole screen would shift to a brand new scene. But how far, Mike, how far did you end up getting into Zombies Ate My Neighbors?
So level 10 got me to a place where I had seen a lot of the different baddies. I'd seen a lot of the different weapons and had gotten kind of some of the different game mechanics, you know, learning to blow through walls and learning of what hits you could take, like Jason was saying, before you could reach your thing, and knowing that if you got your last guy to open up the portal to the next doorway, you were golden.
Yep.
I will say that something I definitely remember from being a kid, too, is that at the time, the different weapons were lost on me. They seemed complicated, and I didn't know which one I should be using, and it was all very difficult, and they had different fire rates. And now I was starting to test it if I throw the fork at the zombie, that kills – or the mummy, that kills him faster. And then if I use the water gun on the zombie, that uses him faster. So it appears that there was definitely some intention in the – you know, the architects to create this vulnerabilities versus baddies kind of concept. But obviously I think as a 12-year-old child, I was like, this is hard and this is complicated.
Yeah. And I don't know if you, have you gotten a chance to listen to our first episodes yet?
I haven't. Okay. No,
we,
I haven't.
We won't.
If we can't even get our guests to listen, though, I mean, it's kind of depressing. You know, that's the way it goes.
You will not be asked back.
Yeah.
One of the things we mentioned earlier is that we found a cool memo from David Fox, one of the founders of, at the time, Lucasfilm Games, before it became LucasArts. And in the memo, he was talking about how the greatest things to the Star Wars games was really what they wanted – or the greatest things about the Star Wars movies was what they wanted to bring into their games. And one of those is the overcoming of seemingly insurmountable obstacles in creative ways. And so that totally fits for me with Monkey Island. You know, it fits for me with Maniac Mansion, all that. What I was surprised is it actually fits with this game, too, in exactly the way you talked about, which is, you know, you've got these different weapons that have different and the zombies have different weaknesses depending on which monster you're going after. But there's the weapons aren't just weapons. So, for example, one of the weapons is a weed whacker, and it works really well to get you through this crazy mushroom field with the poisonous mushrooms. Another weapon is the fire extinguisher, which you can use to freeze enemies and then shoot them with something else. Or, in one of the later levels, where there's a fireplace inside a castle, you can put out the fire and then run behind it and find a secret passage. So there's lots of mixing here between kind of the puzzle games and the arcade shoot-em-up.
Yeah, I would say that sort of playing a little bit outside the formula was, I think, a mark of LucasArts and the Lucas games that set it apart from the arcade games we played as children or the Atari games or the NES or whatever, where there was very much a prescriptive thing. You know, you remember playing Contra, and it was like jam the buttons as fast as you can. If you're playing, you know, Street Fighter, it was get the right combos at the right moments. But this, there was quite literally more than one way to skin a cat, and because of that, there was intrigue.
Right.
If you could only actually skip in the cat in the game, that would have really, really come through.
You had to wait for Sam and Max for that.
Yeah.
Yeah, I didn't realize this when I was playing it, but in reading it, just like what you guys are talking about, that if you throw silverware at the werewolves, apparently they die faster. If you throw the crucifix
because silver.
If you throw the crucifix at the vampire, it dies even faster. Which I don't know how many hours of gameplay it would have taken me to figure that out without having to read it online. But you're right, with LucasArts, it seems like they take the normal genre of a game and they make it just a little more clever, a little smarter, a little more kind of intentional. It's even just the level design, the character design, the puzzles and all that. The reason why we love it so much. Jason, you can talk now.
I'm so sorry. I keep thinking you're done. Did you guys get to drink any of the potions and turn into a monster?
Yes.
Yes.
That was my favorite part as a kid. It was my favorite part now. There's always something cool. I mean, that goes back to Alter Beast, but there's something cool in games when you get to change into something else.
Well, I think there was that mixture of the invulnerability thing that always was something you wanted as a kid in these video games. You wanted to be invulnerable for just a few minutes because the game was going to beat you and you knew it.
Yeah, I think that's a good reason why I still, when I get games, but especially back in the day when I get Super Star Wars or whatever, the first thing I would do was find Galen or whoever, or you two. Because before we had the internet, before there was GameFAQs.com and all these places where you could go for cheats, and I'd find the God mode. Just so I could, like, play the game and experience it without having to die. Which is probably that kind of, like, escapist, like, just wanting to kind of be this character that can kind of float through this world effortlessly and not die, but still have all the pleasure of beating and getting the princess or whatever, all that kind of stuff.
There was something about this game which my gaming years are sadly behind me for the most part, so you have to help me out here, guys. But I would say the way that you could not put in a password for every level, that it took a couple different levels to achieve some sort of password, gave you this sense of satisfaction of achievement, whereas I think a lot of modern games give you or almost take away that satisfaction by giving you the chance to save every 5 seconds and then perfect your whatever and, you know, move forward accordingly. And then, of course, that was all in contrast to what came before it. And I'll reference Contra again. Apparently it left a big impression on me, where you never beat Contra. Contra always won.
Up, up, down, down, left, right, B-A, B-A, select, start.
Except for that.
Wasn't that Akuma's
move? I still lost.
I believe that was Akuma's move that took off like 75% of the...
No, that was history. That probably happened too. Akuma, man. Forgot about Akuma.
No? Wasn't that it?
Yeah. I thought that was the blood code for Mortal Kombat. Up, down, up, down.
Wow. This is taking us back.
What was it? Wasn't there a babification or something too where you turn into a baby and die? You know what? Forget Mortal Kombat. Let's move on. Yeah, I apologize.
This is not the Mortal Kombat podcast. Come on now.
No.
It's next month.
Everybody drink.
All right, so let's talk a little bit about... So we played the game. We loved the game. We were frustrated with the game. How has this type of game... I know we all don't play as many video games now as we did back then, but Jason made a note of why don't they make games like this anymore, or do they, and kind of why aren't they as popular? Obviously, like Madden, COD, Assassin's Creed, those are obviously the big games that we see commercials in the Super Bowl for. But where did these games go? I guess is the question.
I think that there is. I think that was LucasArts' greatest achievement and maybe their greatest downfall is that they straddled too well the line between too many successful genres. You have an educational genre, you have a puzzle genre, and you have kind of a run and gun genre. And so, you know, Zombies Ate My Neighbors is quite literally, I think, the perfect amalgamation of that kind of element. And then they kind of moved more into the educational and the kind of the sardonic with the Monkey Islands and the Sam and Max and the Day of the Tentacle. And then I would say even some of the run and gun with creativity leads us in many years later into the kind of Metal Gear Solid world, you know, where there was more than one way to solve a problem, but it still was run and gun.
Yeah,
I think, and now, how old is Metal Gear Solid now? Is that 15 years old? Is it older?
A little bit older. I think I was playing that freshman year of college.
Oh my gosh.
That's about right.
So yeah, but nowadays I feel like there's a big shift between console games and mobile games. And I'm sure PC games would be a third category. And only in mobile games do I really see a lot of the arcade games happening, the quick playing. And I'm sure that there are people who are really into fighting games and things like that for consoles. But for the most part, it feels like console games are the ones that I hear people talk about, are the ones that are 40 hours long and detailed and have many missions and are, you know, very linear gameplay and a story mode. I just can't see Zombies fitting into that. It's somewhere in between. It's the fast-paced arcade of a mobile game, but you couldn't play it there either because you'd need a controller.
Yeah, it does seem like a Steam game or like a $20 or $10 downloadable from the PlayStation Store, or Xbox Store kind of game because it's almost so simple. It's up, down, left, right, and you shoot. It seems overly simple until you start playing it for 5 minutes and realize how complex it can be. But yeah, you're right. It doesn't seem like these types of games today have 55 levels or have, yeah, that kind of depth that this game had.
Yeah, it was actually re-released for the Virtual Console, which is Nintendo Wii's downloadable thing. And it's actually been quite popular evidently.
And it's the same exact game, right? It's not like a new remastered version or anything.
No, it's just ported to it.
Yeah, that's cool. I mean, it's definitely a timeless kind of gameplay.
I've got a little game for us to play.
Oh, yeah. Which I'll probably make a bump for later. What's the game called?
Yeah. It's called What's He Saying?
What's He Saying? What's He Saying? What is He Saying?
So, here you go. Here's a link. Mike, can you access the chat screen?
Mm-hmm.
All right. So I want you to pay attention. This is going to be the song from level 2. It does get replayed a few times throughout the game. But the song that plays through a level 2, it's got a voice. And the voice is saying something, the zombie voice. And I want to know, what is he saying? Mike frozen, or is he still listening to it?
Listen.
Okay, cool.
Intently.
Hold on. I mean, it's a little repetitive.
I was really trying to get it. I thought there was a word at the end. I think it's a num-num, and then I think there might be a word.
There's a num-num and a word on the end is my favorite t-shirt.
Really? Like, you keep talking exactly when it starts.
Well, let's just spitball. Let's just spitball. What could he be saying?
So it sounds like Brlogdinognox. Is that similar to what you're hearing?
Right, you're on the right track.
Brlogdinognox. You're not gonna eggnog.
You're not gonna eggnog. I like that. You're not gonna eggnog. You're not gonna eggnog.
That actually makes sense. I feel like a zombie could say that. That's a sentence they could say.
All right, so Ben's answer is you're not going to eggnog, is that
right? No, that's Mike's answer.
Oh, that was Mike's answer. Okay.
Yeah.
Ben, well, your answer was something about Brobdignagian.
I'm going to go with, get back here, you blonde freak.
Da-na-na. Get back here, blonde freak.
Right.
All right. I know which player you played as.
Juliet. No, what's her name? Jane? Jules.
Racist.
Jillian.
Yeah, that's what I thought.
Zeke and what's her name? Julie. It is Julie. It's Julie.
I have no idea. Julie.
It's Julie. All right. No. Is he actually saying words? You look this up?
No. This is a. I told you this is a ink blot. It's just a chance for us to try and take a guess as to what he might be saying. Yeah. So, Mike said again. Mike, what was yours?
Well, I want to submit. My first answer was num num and the word on the end.
Yes, num num. But not that he said num num and then there was a word on the end. He was literally saying num num and a word on the end.
Okay.
I'm sure. I can't help myself.
And Ben, what was your answer?
I'm trying to figure it out.
I'm sorry.
Oh, you know what? It kind of sounds like he could be mumbling something about Bernard Bernoulli right there.
Oh, I like that.
Maybe Bernard is going to come back. I can
Bernard
hear that.
Bernard going to get you.
Bernard. Bernard going to come back. All right.
I got it. He's saying, num num, going to get some.
Yeah.
I'm going to get some.
So I remember this song from when we played it the first time when we were kids. And I knew exactly what he said then. And it's still what he says now. And it should cast some light into how I played this game.
Okay.
But he was saying, that's not what I said. And in my mind, it was in the middle. He was in the middle of a fight. There was another side to this argument. Again, I was, what, 8 or 9 when we played this game? I can do math. I was 12. All right.
This is the zombie talking to the other zombie?
Zombie. I don't know who the other person is he's talking to. Clearly someone he's in a relationship with.
Right,
but I don't want to judge. It could be a non-zombie. And he's saying, no, that's not what I said.
Yeah.
And he's saying it over and over and over. And it just drilled into me. I felt like there was this really drawn out argument happening. And I found that level incredibly anxious because of that. And it's also an answer to both of your guys when you said something about eggnog. And Ben, yours was about Bernard, which I think is brilliant. Unfortunately, no, that's not what he said.
Oh, well, thanks for the heads up on that. I'm trying to find out who did the soundtrack, and I want to actually find out what this voice is, what kind of effects they put on it, and what he's saying. And
actually, I think I've heard this story. He was working a MIDI machine, and he accidentally fell over on the lower notes. And then he was like, oh, you know, that kind of sounds good. We'll just keep that, I guess, for now. Just for now, and then we'll come back to it. And then, they never did.
We'll put the stuff about Bernard in there later, but whatever, yeah. All right. Wow. Thanks.
I can't believe you guys didn't play it backwards.
Oh my gosh. All right.
My backwards else, MIDI machine, yeah.
Anything on Zombies at My Neighbor, overall feelings on the game, lasting legacy, any final notes you guys have on the gameplay or overall Zombies at My Neighbors?
I would say I do remember the weed whacker whacking the little poisonous mushroom fields being incredibly gratifying as a kid, and it was equally gratifying as an adult. So that was definitely something. If you're going to go out there, get the emulator, going to play the game, grab that weed whacker and whack you some mushrooms.
Absolutely. I remember that feeling.
And on that note, Michael Conrad, thank you very much for joining us. We will definitely have you back for one of the many, many Monkey Island games to kind of chat about the gameplay and nostalgia and all that good stuff, man.
Well, I am honored to even be considered a man of low moral fiber.
All right, enough of you, Mike. We're going to get on to our favorite segment. Here it comes.
This game's pretty fun. You with frustration. When I was all done, I just had two questions. What's the beer? What's the song? I can't always tell. I just want to know. What game is West D12?
Well, that game is not this game, unfortunately, but there are so many other delicious beers that are not West D12 that this game could be. Jay, you want to go first?
Yeah, so my beer, this might be my only chance to get this in here, but Ben and I are homebrewers. We love beer. We love making beer.
We're nerdy about a lot of things, is what he's saying.
If you hadn't picked up on it yet, we're definitely nerds. So I decided to pick a homebrew, and I think that matches up nicely with this game, which I like to think we contributed to as testers. So along those lines,
we basically made Zombies Ate My Neighbors.
Not basically. I think it's pretty clear we did.
We brewed it.
So my game is a clone of Three Floyds Zombie Dust.
Nice.
Now, Ben, have you ever had zombie dust?
I have. You brought it. You shipped it out with yourself and Megan a few years ago. We enjoyed it in Portland 5 years ago, maybe. And
sounds
it
right.
It was delicious.
Big ol' hot bomb, like everything they make.
Yeah, exactly.
It's technically an American pale ale, but no, it's an IPA, or maybe a double IPA. Again, just like everything they make. They have a style, but there's enough hops in it that you should just ignore that style. So, I decided I'm going to make a batch of this up and serve it at the end of the semester. This is something I like to do at the end of the spring semester, is make a big IPA and have a bunch of people over to drink it before it goes bad. Zombie dust is dry hopped with a ton of Citra hops. It's not very bitter. It's right in your nose. It's really pleasant. It's almost like candy. And this game is pleasant. It's all up in your face, and it's kind of like candy.
Nicely done.
Ben and I like to team up on our home brews together. We don't get to do it as much because we don't live near each other, don't get to visit much. But when we do, we go co-op on it, just like Zombies Ain't My Neighbors.
Nicely done again.
Which we didn't get a chance to talk much about the co-op because this time we had to play it separately.
Yeah, co-op, it was the thing I remember most from playing this game, unless I said something else earlier in the episode I remember most. This is the thing I remember most. I remember playing this on a SNES with you and just getting like lost behind hedges on the same screen with you. And it's kind of too bad that we couldn't play co-op in this. I think next time we hang out, we'll have to figure out a way to bring this up and play this together, just to experience that extreme frustration and brotherly love like we did 20 years ago.
Oh, yeah. I remember you dragging you along and you whining like a little twit.
Yeah, exactly.
I don't know if that's a swear word, but
I'm leaving it in.
If I remember correctly, I think I actually figured out how to like lock you in a corner so that you couldn't get out. Wedge you between like a hedge maze and a brick wall.
For us.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. It was
I was
there.
A terrible brother.
Yeah, yeah. Were. So, yeah, is that all you got for that beer?
That's all I got.
All right. So my beer is some of the reasons I chose this beer was I was trying to sum up the game into kind of one or two sentences. And it was something that was very accessible at first, right? As you look at the game, if you're watching someone else play, it's just someone running around and shooting things. It looks really easy. Then when you start to play it yourself, you're like, okay, this is a little confusing. And then ultimately at the end, once you've played it for a little bit, you realize that yes, it's pretty complex. But this game ultimately, is really rewarding and brings something new and original to the world. So I tried to make my beer and my song match that criteria. And so the beer I chose, 10 Barrel Brewing's Apocalypse IPA, 10 barrels in Bend, Oregon. And it is just, I think it might be their flagship IPA. I don't know what it is, but it is just a fantastic IPA. And at first you're like, oh, West Coast IPA. I know what it's going to be. It's going to smell like cat pee and flowers and pine trees, because that's what all West Coast IPAs. But no, my friend, it's not. I didn't bring any of the specs, so I don't know the percentage of the IBUs or anything, but it's one of the most complex IPAs I've ever had. I'm not going to say it's the greatest IPA or it's not a Pliny clone or anything like that, but it's just fantastic. Really complex, really rewarding, an IPA like I've never had before.
I've never had it.
Oh, you've never
I
had
really
this.
Want to try it now. Oh. No. What is it called again?
It's called Apocalypse IPA.
Apocalypse. I'm in.
Next time you're out here, it comes in bombers. We can get them over here at the local grocery
store.
We'll
do that.
Yeah.
Hey, co-op mode. Right there. Bomber. Boom.
Love it. All right. What's the song?
My song, I think everybody's going to know it right away when I say it's from 1962. It's a big hit from Bobby Boris Pickett. You already know the name, right, Ben? Don't type. I can see you.
Bobby Pickett?
Yep.
And the Moonshiners?
Cue music now?
I don't know.
And here comes the intro music. Bam!
Do it.
I was working in the lab late one night when my eyes beheld an eerie sight. For my monster from his slab began to rise, and suddenly, to my surprise,
he did the mash.
He did the monster.
That's right. It's the monster mash.
Oh, solid. I did not. Yeah. It's just, you want to give any reasons as to why, if people can't connect the dots here?
I don't want to be too subtle about it.
Yeah.
There's monsters in that, and there's monsters in the game.
Oh,
and it's kind of fun.
Yeah. Okay, I see that now. Do you want me to do my song now? It's 1962, Bobby Pickett's, no. Are you good?
Oh, yeah.
All right.
So, yeah, thanks for listening to my song, Ben. Tell me a little bit about your song.
I'm going to tell you all about it. Just like this simile, or the song to the game, it might seem a little obvious at first, kind of like Monster Mash, but there is a little bit more depth behind the answer once you give the song a full listen. So here you go. Oh! All right. So, first of all, rest in peace, Glenn Frey, who left us a few weeks ago. But that is the Eagles, I don't know, 1970-something, Hotel California. and it's just obviously a classic hit from the Eagles. We all know the song well, but for obvious reasons, you know, there's the getting trapped in this hotel with the monsters. You stab it with your steely knives, but you can't kill the beast. Just a great song about killing monsters. We all love that. Similarly... I think that's all I got. I don't know.
Well, I think it's also pretty clear that just like in the game, right. In the game, when you fight and finally defeat Dr. Tongue, you realize that the real monster is us.
Wow, that's deep. I think we should probably move on as quickly as possible.
I think that's best.
All right, so I think the only thing we have left on our to-do list for today is to pick the next game, pick the next episode.
Yeah, let's travel back in time with us to a year you may not be familiar with. See, Pablo Honey by a little British band called Radiohead had just come out. Mm-hmm. The World Wide Web was on everyone's mind as it had just been released for free to everyone. This was world-changing stuff, but...
Around the world. Worldwide, even.
Which, you know, quick pause. World Wide Web. Nobody says that. We all say WWW. But is it weird that that's literally three times as long to say as World Wide Web?
Oh, my goodness. Wow.
Three times as long. What are we doing?
Let's keep moving here.
All right. We need to fix that, people. Let's get on this. I want a president who can get me to say things more quickly. Today. Thank you. Yeah. Thank you. I'm calling CERN. The year was 1993, and perhaps more important than Radiohead's first album and more important than the World Wide Web was a game that brought together two brothers, one 12, the other 8. Little game called Rebel Assault. I know I can hear your excitement from here. It's pretty great. Ben, what do you remember about the game?
I remember a lot of fire and explosions and frustration from this game. This is the game that I think of when before we started this whole... a project of Men of Low Moral Fiber for years, when I think of old LucasArts games and Star Wars games specifically, it was the little canyon run training session, which is, I think, the first level of Rebel Assault, which is you and we decided a couple episodes ago. What are you flying?
Oh, gosh. T-51.
Nice. I like that. I think that's close. T-51.
T-19.
T-something. No, T-51 sounds... We'll stick with it. I'm sure that's right. We'll fix it in the notes if it's not. flying your T-51 down the canyon and just crashing into the canyon walls over and over into just a fiery, horrible mess.
And a little pre-recorded animation of your ship exploding.
But, like, I think there's three different explosions.
Yeah,
if you were, like, turning left or right or going over a canyon wall or whatever, it would give you that. But those same three over and over and over.
Oh, my gosh. I remember convincing so many myself... times. That it wasn't a pre-recorded animation and that it was, you know, something I could control even while I was crashing.
Oh, it's so sad. 8 and 12. We were not the smartest or most advanced video gamers at that point.
And yet, at that time, I could soup up my old 386 computer with extra RAM to play this brand new CD-ROM game that had come out. So I knew something, but I didn't know much.
You knew it needed more RAM if you were seeing the frames as you were exploding.
Just throw some more RAM at it.
Yeah. Buy RAM and put it into the computer machine. Yeah, I mean, this game, there are a lot of Star Wars games that LucasArts made. This is one of the couple dozen or so that they developed, too, because they didn't develop all of the Star Wars games that you see in stores. They licensed out. I don't know if you knew this. George Lucas likes to make money.
And
LucasArts, Lucasfilm, it's a business. And George Lucas is, I think, worth $4 billion, something like that.
Yeah.
Part of that is licensing out the Star Wars name. Rebel Assault is one of the core games, I guess we could refer to them as, that was developed and produced in-house by LucasArts.
It
was one of the few games that we talked about tackling first, because there's a lot.
is it weird that he's worth $4 billion? Because that feels like you could buy him. And I feel that's inappropriate.
What if you just wanted to buy a part of him? Like, right? Just can the beard.
Can we invest? The beard is clearly the most important part, because have you seen him without
what
it?
What else would you want? I would never
it's
see him
so,
without it.
No, it's so not inappropriate. Good. It's not good.
A couple other games we were talking about playing. TIE Fighter was one of them. Dark Forces was another. And I think eventually we'll tackle those. What we didn't want to do is play a bunch of games and then realize we had 10 Star Wars games to do in a row. Trying to keep it fresh, you know, divvy it up a little bit, just like with maybe some Monkey Islands eventually. We'll divvy those up. We won't do all those in a row. Unlike what we did with Maniac Mansion, where we just, the first two episodes, knocked both of those out. We can never do another Maniac Mansion game.
Until there's another sequel made.
True. True, Tim Schafer.
Looking at you, Tim. Looking at you, Ron.
Dave Grossman, was he part of that? I think he was. Anyway.
Gary Winnick, everybody.
Gary Winnick,
everybody.
Dang it. Yeah. I think that's what we're going to be doing next. So
real quick for this, if you haven't played Rebel Assault before, it's part flight simulator, part vehicle game where you get to go around on like a speeder bike, and part first-person shooter. Any other parts, Ben, that I should remember?
Cockpit flight simulator, I think you said that.
Yeah.
Yep, I'm saying it again.
Cutscene warehouse, because I remember a lot of cutscenes and being really impressed with them.
And the cutscenes are actually from the film. They're actually shots from Star Wars, which is kind of cool, too, especially for 1993.
Blew me away.
Yeah. So, yeah, that's what we'll be doing the next couple weeks. And we actually timed this up because this episode, I believe, the episode you're listening to comes out, I think, April 1st-ish. No joke. Okay. So the May episode, the first Friday in May is May 6th. We figured we'd fudge that a little bit, come out 2 days earlier. May the 4th be with you.
Be with you.
No lisp there. But Star Wars Day is in May, so we figured we'd jump on our first Star Wars game, too.
Super excited. Can't wait. So, kids, do your homework. Write it down. Get ready. You can go pick up your copy of Rebel Assault at GOG.com, and I'm sure other places. We'll put some links on the website for you.
Yeah, and if you ever have questions about emulators or downloading it, or if it's going to work on your machine, you can ask us, and we'll tell you what we used. So we'll be playing that. Feel free to play that, too, over the next couple weeks, and we'll be kind of updating you on our website. Which is menoflowmoralfiber.com. You can follow us on Twitter as well at MOLMFpod. And then you can also email us at MOLMFpod@gmail.com. Jay, do you have anything else?
No. Just remember to go download Rebel Assault. Play it over the next month. You got a month to get it done before the next episode comes out. And I expect you all to turn your homework in on time.
Yeah, and you can follow along with our progress on that game, too, on our website and Twitter and email and Facebook and all those good things. So, yeah, thank you to everyone who actually has been downloading these episodes and subscribing and listening. And I mean, we're not advertising yet, so it's not like we're saying, hey, go download it and make us money or anything at this point. I think the reason that we want people to like it on iTunes and review it and tell their friends about it is just because we, from the very beginning, wanted to make a show that we would want to listen to. And so we assume that there's probably at least one or two other people out there who would want to listen to a wacky podcast like this and play these games again and relive their childhood. So if you do know that person, feel free to share it with them. But again, just thank you to everyone who's been coming up to us and telling us that they like what they hear, and to keep it up and all that good stuff.
Yeah, we really appreciate all that you've been saying the last couple weeks. And we know most of it's lies, but thank you. They're kind lies.
Kind lies from people that don't even like video games. That was the most surprising thing.
I know.
Like,
so
half
weird.
Of the people
so
that
crazy.
Have told me that they thought our podcast was funny or entertaining in the very least, I was like, oh, really? What games did you play? They're like, I never played any. I've never heard of LucasArts before, but I just thought it was funny. It's like, all right.
We're going to have to find out from them what they want the podcast to actually be about. And we'll just take a hard left at some
right.
point.
Yeah. As soon as I'm like, oh, you should download this emulator. And then their eyes just glaze over. And they're like, I'll just download the next episode. And I was like, okay, just do that. We'll play the games for you and we'll tell you what it's all about. So I think that's all we have for you. Thank you again. I have been Ben.
And I will be Jason.
And I am a mighty pirate.
And